Good morning. Please be seated. We are here in the matter of WPH Architecture, Inc. versus Vegas VP LP. This is case number 54389. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor.
Very well.
I read on the Supreme Court's website that there were a number of questions that the court, I think, intended to direct to the parties arguing. So I thought the most expeditious way to address the panel's concern would be to go through those questions, and certainly the other side will have a chance to respond as well. So if it may please the court, the first question at issue was, did the AAA panel have jurisdiction to grant WPH's post-award motion for fees and costs?
Well, before you get there, though, I'm sorry to derail your argument off the questions. This is a review, well, it's a direct appeal, but it's a review of an arbitration award, correct?
Yes.
And our ability to review an arbitration award is strictly limited to the statutory grounds and then this manifest disregard of law, common law basis, correct?
Right.
So my question to you is, let's say I credit your viewpoint that NRS 38238 allowed this panel to grant attorney's fees premised on Nevada's offer of judgment statute. Even if I credit that point, how can I help you consistent with the deferential review that is required by law for me reviewing an arbitration award?
For a number of reasons, this panel is entitled to evaluate whether these arbitrators manifestly disregarded the law and their refusal to apply Nevada law, which was beyond dispute, to the arbitration proceedings.
But isn't it kind of like in the criminal setting, we have plain error. It has to be unmistakably clear that they had a duty to grant you fees and costs on 68-17-115. And even if I say, if I were an arbitrator, I would have done that. That's not the review that I apply. I have to say, was it just manifest disregard of the law? I see it, and I'm not going to follow it.
Well, these arbitrators were apparently confused, believing they needed to ask help from this particular court for guidance on whether statutory offers were enforceable in AAA arbitrations. And they, based upon the case law and the statutes, they certainly had jurisdiction to grant the motion for fees and costs.
Oh, I think they had jurisdiction to do so.
And they also had authority under a number of sources, including Rule 44A, I think it's
the
arbitration of the Uniform Arbitration Act, but they also had an obligation to do so. The arbitrators did not terminate their jurisdiction when they issued the initial award finding in favor of WPH. They maintained jurisdiction to rule on the motion for fees and costs, but apparently were befuddled by whether they had such authority or if they needed to look to this Supreme Court to make a pronouncement. Because it is true, there is no published case in Nevada by this court that rules upon the issue of whether offers of judgment are enforceable in arbitration. However, through many means that were otherwise available to them, including the statutory means and common law, which basically holds that an arbitrator must not act in an arbitrary or capricious manner, and they may not manifestly disregard the law. Their first manifest disregard of the law was refusal to accept the fact that the contract called for the law of the principal place of business of WPH, the architect, and there was sworn testimony and a declaration in the record, I believe at page 144, that indeed Mr. Walton, the principal, the W of WPH, that the principal place of business of his company was Las Vegas, that he was a resident of Las Vegas, that he was a licensed architect in Las Vegas, And we all know that a licensed registered architect in the state of Nevada is required in order to stamp and sell plans, which is why Vegas VP hired WPH in the first place. They had some other architect from Houston, but that architect was not competent to sign stamp plans. So it is beyond credulity that this panel would completely ignore the contract that the parties negotiated. If you look at that contract, it's about 30 pages long, and there are many, many modifications to it. It was clearly a hard-fought negotiated contract with many additions and deletions between the parties, fully negotiated and crystal clear that the law of the principal place of business of the architect, which was Nevada, shall apply. So I think that not only did the panel have jurisdiction authority, they also had the obligation to enforce statutory offers of judgment, with WPH asserting two offers of judgment and Vegas VP rejecting both of them. Those were made relatively early on after the parties had had a chance to evaluate the claims. It had already been a mediation. There was plenty of opportunity for Vegas VP to be realistic in evaluating those offers, but they denied both of them.
But in reviewing offers of judgment, you have to look at the Beatty versus Thomas factors. And just because you make an offer of judgment you prevail on the terms of the offer doesn't mean you get attorney's fees. I mean, it's a whole panoply of issues to be considered there.
Yes, and
that's why I'm concerned with Justice Pickering's point is, can we look behind what the arbitrators are doing based upon our standard of review? And because the relief I think you're seeking is in order from us to compel them to grant attorney's fees and costs pursuant to the offer of judgment, you know, like that. Is that correct?
Well, I think at this point what I'm asking is it be remanded to the district court to enter a ruling consistent with this panel's ruling, which would be to evaluate the offers of judgment and the other opportunities for recovery of costs and fees and prejudgment interest and determine what is appropriate under the circumstances. The case of Wynn versus, excuse me one minute. I'm not putting my hand on it, but the case of Wynn versus Smith dealt with these issues about what are the factors to consider about the appropriateness of a statutory offer. And the factors are generally, was the offer reasonable? Was the failure to accept it unreasonable or in bad faith? Were the attorney's fees sought reasonable under the circumstances? And I'd remind this court, as set forth in the record, that my firm was charging $185 to $195 an hour compared to the attorney on the other side charging more than twice that at $450. So clearly this issue about the reasonableness of attorney's fees under the circumstances. So I understand that there is a vetting that must be performed, but my understanding would be that depending upon this court's ruling, that it would be remanded to the federal court, or excuse me, to the district court to make that determination.
But I want to return to our ability to mandate that attorney's fees and costs be awarded. And I guess you're asking us to return it to the district court for the district court to evaluate whether, in what amount should the fees and costs be awarded. My problem is that the arbitration statute, and I'll credit you that you could say, I can read 238 or whatever it is, to support that an arbitrator could, without manifestly disregarding the law, say, I am going to grant fees and costs pursuant to NRCP 68 and 17115, the offer of judgment, and he would not be manifestly disregarding the law if he did so. But that statute, the Uniform Arbitration Act, says may award attorney's fees and costs if they're recoverable in a civil action involving the same claim. It's not clear to me from that statute whether that's like claim means Civil Rights Act where you've got a statutory authorization for fees that's tied to that claim, or whether it means offer of judgment. But let me credit that it even means offer of judgment. Do I have manifest disregard of the law for not doing it when you have the statute that controls, the ARB Act, says may award attorney's fees and costs? It appears to me that there's a deal you make when you go into arbitration, like it or not, that you're opting for this abbreviated, supposedly expedited, supposedly less expensive mechanism, and you're going to relax and alter the rules that apply in state law. So given that deal and given the permissive may and given the manifest disregard standard, I'll repeat my opening question. How is it that these arbitrators manifestly disregarded clearly established law requiring the award of fees and costs to your client?
Number one, the arbitrators never even got to that section of the arbitration provision that would our uniform arbitration statute.
So they manifestly disregarded
it. Right. They never even got to this issue about that they even have the authority. The bottom line is that statutory offers of judgment are substantive, not just procedural. They are substantive law, Nevada law, applied to this dispute, and they manifestly disregarded the application of Nevada law, completely abrogating their responsibilities as charters of fact. It just was beyond dispute. And clearly, the other side, the parties all cited Nevada law. Vegas VP has litigated 4, 5, 6 cases in Nevada, all arising out of this metropolis condo high-rise project. I mean, the application of Nevada law just cannot be disputed. And once Nevada law applies, then those offer of judgment statutes come into play, and all of the jurisprudence about them under Nevada law that has been published in the last 30 years.
Are there any cases anywhere that have applied, have found it a manifest disregard of law for an arbitrator not to award fees and costs pursuant to a state offer of judgment statute?
Are you talking about in Nevada?
No, I'm talking about anywhere in the United States.
I can't speak for everywhere in the country. I'd be happy to research that further and provide supplemental briefing.
Because it's a Uniform Act provision. I didn't find anything. I'll tell you.
I also did find a single case that said that offers of judgment are only procedural. All of the cases, including the United States Supreme Court, have held that offers of judgment are substantive law.
And the Ninth Circuit case on Nevada's, actually.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, the number of cases, there's the MRO case, the Nevada case, the Supreme Court law that I was referring to is Mitsubishi Motors versus Solar Chrysler Plymouth. By agreeing to arbitrate a statutory claim, a party does not forego the substantive rights afforded by the statute. It only submits to their resolution in an arbitral rather than judicial forum. So here, as I understand the statute, the Uniform Arbitration Act, if this action had been brought in district court, then the offers of judgment would have been enforceable and would have been compelled to be enforceable based upon all of the case law that Nevada has developed on statutory offers, LBOs, and other decisions. Fees are permitted as a matter of course. It's a right to have an opportunity to recover costs and prejudgment interest. LBOs probably goes through the most comprehensive discussion of the various factors and what's recoverable. So I think once you get to the point where it's substantive law that statutory offers of judgment are enforceable, then you have to look back and say, yes, it was manifest disregard of the law not to apply Nevada law, which would have compelled the enforceability of those statutes, and we wouldn't have been here today.
I wanted to question you. I'm almost out of time, but I am going to give you 2 extra minutes because of the depth of our questions for your rebuttal.
Thank you.
And I will add 2 minutes to your time as well.
Thank you. I was going to ask you to do that because I took too much time.
I'm going to give you 2 more minutes, but the clock is still ticking.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you had a question for me.
No. I just wanted to let you know you were running out of time. Sorry.
There was a couple of other points about I think that we're beyond the point, at least I hope we are, that the Vegas VP has indeed waived any argument that some other choice of law applied besides Nevada law. I mean, between the fact that the arbitrator cited Nevada law, and of course there's five Nevada decisions cited in their arbitration award, and one that wasn't, and ironically, two of those decisions were Callaway and Terracon. Terracon was my case up on appeal at that time during certified question, and the panel felt constrained to rule that negligence was barred because the economic loss doctrine was up on review in front of the Nevada Supreme Court. So clearly they understood that Nevada law bound them, and as a result, they just simply found that it didn't matter because there was no negligence nor breach of contract. So but at the end of the day, some law of some jurisdiction must apply. There is no law of Kalamazoo or Timbuktu that could have applied. There's no other state that would be appropriate in this particular instance whose law could have applied. And in fact, there's no AAA common law. I mean, basically, AAA has some rules to marshal the parties procedurally through cases, but it doesn't have any law of its own that would speak to this issue. It could be only Nevada law. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Cowdy, you will have 17 minutes to start.
Thank you, Your Honor. Excuse me. I'm just going to get right to the heart of the question because Justice Pickering's questions were exactly what I was intending to address. The arbitration statute grants arbitrators authority to award fees when the state law permits it, the underlying law permits it. It doesn't mandate that they're required to. So on that basis alone, there can't be any, there is certainly not an arbitrary and capricious issue here because there's been no disregard of facts, but there's also, there hasn't been a disregard of clear applicable law. Counsel herself conceded that at, you know, at worst, the arbitrators were confused over whether the law applied. By the law applying, I mean whether the offer of judgment applied.
Let me ask you this, though. Your opponent makes the argument that the arbitrators, in fact, did disregard 38-238. The order doesn't cite it. Now, I don't know what was briefed to the arbitrators, whether or not you, whether there was an argument. Look, under the RBAC, 238 gives you the authority to do this. Will you please do so? And here's 17115 and 68, whether it was even cited to them. So my question to you is this a manifest disregard of 38-238 by the arbitrators in failing to acknowledge that they had authority under the Uniform RBAC to award fees? They just weren't mandated to do so.
It's not a manifest disregard. First of all, I don't think they disregarded 238 simply because they didn't cite it. The bulk of the decision was addressing whether or not Nevada law required, or rather permitted, fees to be awarded. So they were questioning whether the underlying law applied in an arbitration situation. So I don't think the fact that they didn't happen to cite the statute that...
You're arguing, as I understand it, that 238... because it has the language tying it to claims of that nature or whatever the language is in it, that, and you cite the comments to the UAA that suggest that that provision works with statutory fee awards, say in consumer protection litigation where the prevailing plaintiff may recover fees, where there's that kind of specific grant as part of the cause of action.
Mm-hmm.
Is it your contention that 238 is limited to that situation, or do you believe that it is broad enough to encompass offers of judgment pursuant to state law? And do you have any law on it other than the, what you cited in your briefs? I didn't find anything discussing
I didn't find anything either, Your Honor. I don't think that the intent of the drafters of the Uniform Partnership Act were to, was to include the sort of procedural rule-shifting, you know, penalty-type attorney fee awards that arise out of, you know, for frivolous claims or for the failure to accept an offer of judgment. I don't think that was their intent. I think it was intended to include claims and causes of action that there are statutory fee-shifting provisions. That's my opinion. But I don't
see the examples that they give. I mean,
pardon me?
The examples they give are all in the latter category.
Exactly. Right. They're fee, substantive law fee-shifting provisions. But more importantly, I don't think that matters in this case because the arbitrators weren't disregarding a clear and obvious law. They were asking whether the law existed. In other words, whether they actually, that provision actually allowed them in an arbitral proceeding to award fees for an offer of judgment, you know, for that basis. If they're actually questioning that, clearly it can't be a conscious disregard of an obvious law.
Well, conscious disregard and manifest disregard, two different things.
I'm sorry, manifest disregard. The point is, and I'll quote some of this court's own authority, it's, you know, manifest disregard is whether, it's not whether they correctly interpreted the law. And that's, you know, maybe there's an issue here. I don't think it matters one way or the other for the facts of this case whether the arbitrators were correct in saying we don't think we have the authority.
But if it does matter, then we're going to be reviewing every arbitral award.
If that's true.
So do I understand your argument to be you acknowledge that the NRS 17115 and Rule 68 and all of those offer of judgment-like rules, fee-shifting rules, are substantive law, clearly, and do apply to arbitration. But in this case, your argument is that the panel simply chose not to make an award.
No, that's not my argument at all, Your Honor.
Okay.
My argument, first of all, and I will be happy to address why I think that the arbitration or the offer judgment rules don't apply in arbitration. And that is simply because under the statute for what post-award modifications an arbitration panel can make does not include adding fees. That's in Nevada statute. And in fact, the arbitrators cited those provisions.
But Chapter 38 says they can do so.
No, Chapter 38 does not say they. It specifically does not give them permission to do so, Your Honor. Forgive me for disagreeing. But in fact, if you look at 38-237, change of award by arbitrator, there are specific grounds set forth under which the arbitrator can change an award. Now here we had an award, and we had post-award motion. Post-award motions are first grounds upon a ground stated in paragraph A or C of subsection NRS 38-242. Section A is a mathematical miscalculation or an evident mistake in a description of person, thing, or property. C is an award is imperfect in a matter of form not affecting the merits. Neither of those apply. The second ground in which the arbitrator can modify an award is because they have not made a final and definite award upon a claim submitted. Here they had done so. And then in C, to clarify the award. This was not a motion to clarify the award. It was a motion to add to it, to add fees and judgments. 38-327 does not permit an arbitrator to engage in post-award fee and costs.
But you don't debate that 38-238 allows them to award attorney's fees if they so choose.
No, I do debate that for just this reason. They can't do it in an offer of judgment statute because of the way the offer of judgment.
I didn't make that modification. I'm simply asking whether or not you debate with me that 38-238 would allow an arbitrator to make a reasonable attorney's fees award.
Yes, as part of their original award, which is exactly what the AAA rules permit as well. The arbitrator cited both, the panel cited both the AAA award rules and NRS 38-237 and 38-242 as another reason why they couldn't grant the relief here.
So they didn't, in your opinion, manifestly disregard 38.238?
I'm quite sure they didn't manifestly disregard it because they spent most of that decision discussing the issue of whether, in fact, an offer of judgment could be applied in an arbitration proceeding. The very fact that they are questioning it demonstrates that they weren't disregarding it. They just didn't know the answer.
What is the definition in the arbitral setting of manifest disregard of law?
Well, this court defined it as, well, doesn't give it a definition, but it says the arbitrator, knowing the law and recognizing that the law required a particular result, simply disregarded the law.
So it's an intransigent refusal, kind of.
Here, the arbitration panel, what counsel conceded, or I shouldn't say conceded, counsel says it's a matter of first impression for this court whether an offer of judgment statute applies in the arbitration setting. If it's a matter of first impression, how in the world could the arbitration panel have disregarded the rule? They would apparently have first to anticipate what this court would decide.
How would that ever be established, then? How would it ever be established if you're always going to be caught in the manifest disregard of law? I mean, do you do it with deck relief? Do you do it in your agreement? Maybe that's why there's no law that's readily discoverable under offer of judgment in 38238's ULA site. I don't know.
I'm not sure what you're asking.
I'm asking if you have a situation where it's a matter of first impression, therefore it can't be a manifest disregard not to have done something in accord with the argument. It will always be a matter of first impression under the manifest disregard standard because you'll never get there. Right?
Well, not necessarily, because this court could certainly rule on it in a case where the arbitration panel decided it did have authority.
Okay, I see your point. Fair enough.
Also, could the statute be amended by the legislature to provide for fees under either 18010 or NRCP 68 or 17.115?
And the parties could contract. I mean, it's all a matter of contract.
Yeah. Ultimately, that's what binds an arbitration proceeding, is the contractual agreement. There are specific provisions that can't be waived in an arbitral setting. Attorney's fees is not one of them. Now,
so they could have written their own script on that?
They could have, yes, and they did not.
Her argument is that by incorporating Nevada law, they did.
But we also, well, as I've just demonstrated, Nevada law does not permit a post-award motion for fees in an arbitration
setting. But at least it's arguable that it doesn't, and that's all you need.
That's true. That is how the panel interpreted that statute. I believe correctly. But let me explain further why I believe that an offer of judgment can't be imposed in an arbitration setting. Because of that rule, where you can't award fees post-award. And then if you look at the offer of judgment statute that holds that you can't submit the evidence other than in a proceeding devoted to fees and award, or fees and cost.
Meaning it only can be submitted in a lawsuit, you know, is that what you're saying, in a district court complaint proceeding?
Well, certainly the language of the offer of judgment statute, which refers repeatedly to what the court should do or what the clerk of the court should do, clearly contemplates that it is in a court setting. So I don't think that there was any intent when the legislature adopted the offer of judgment statute that it would be included in.
But in the conventional, you have a statute that if you prevail, you're entitled to fees and costs, a civil rights type setting, take that. You would include in your request, you would say to the arbitrators, I'm the plaintiff here, and if I win, I want fees, and therefore, in your award, please make provision for me to have a mechanism.
Precisely. And I suppose you could do that for the offer of judgment.
That's where I was
except
going.
Except that it says that the offer of judgment is not admissible. So I don't know how you would do it.
And you don't, of course, deny, and this may be two steps backwards, but you don't deny that in the original demand for arbitration, you requested attorney's fees as well.
I believe that is accurate, Your Honor.
And on what basis?
But as the Unfortunately, I can't answer that. We, a different firm was representing the party at the time. But I do know that while it was in the demand by both parties, as the arbitrators pointed out, neither party addressed it further after the original claim and counterclaim. Are there further questions?
When was the offer of judgment made? Was there I'm trying to remember the procedure, but was there a complaint filed in district court, then a motion to compel arbitration, or did it go straight to arbitration?
Straight to arbitration.
So there never was a court proceeding, ever?
Not until after when the...
So your point is under NRCP 68 and 17115, you have to make an offer, you can't file with the court, you serve it on the opposing side, and you file it at the conclusion of the proceedings, but you're saying it has to be a court proceeding to even have the offer judgment procedure to go forward.
But certainly that would be true for Rule 68 because the rules of civil procedure apply
How about 17.115? How about NRS 17.115?
That's what we're arguing. But if you look at the terms of that rule, which preclude you from...
That's a statute.
If you look at the terms of that statute, you preclude it from presenting any evidence of the offer during your case in chief. And then if you look at the arbitration proceedings, you are only allowed to address those issues in case in chief because there's no post-award provision for fees and cost awards.
Unless you ask the arbitrator to, in the pre-trial order, pre-arbitration order, to make provision for approve up on fees. I mean, we could do that.
You could do that, or the arbitration panel could indicate that its decision on the merits was not a final award.
Exactly so, and that would be my point on that.
But that's not what happened here.
Yeah.
There any other questions for the court?
Thank you very much.
The procedure here, if the court would disagree with me and choose to reverse this remand to the district court, I think then the appropriate action would be to remand to try to reassemble this arbitration panel because it's the parties who the entity presiding over the court over the proceeding, rather, is the one who's best able to determine the fees and their reasonableness. And that's just my own thoughts as to what appropriate relief would be in the event you disagree with me. But obviously, I think the district court order should be affirmed. And I thank the court for its time.
Thank you, Ms. Cannon.
Do I have a minute or two left?
You have a little bit of 2 minutes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Very quickly, the suggestion is that somehow WPA should have tipped off the arbitrators that it had made a statutory offer of judgment before the panel, before the arbitration hearing itself had ended. I don't believe there's any obligation to do that, and in fact, they could draw a negative inference. Oh, WPH already agreed to pay money, knowing that we are now saying, hey, we made an offer of judgment, and of course the attorney on the other side wouldn't want that same inference. If Vegas VP had made an offer of judgment, they wouldn't want to tip off the panel to create this inference that they were willing to compromise their dispute. So I think that goes kind of to the core strategy issue of statutory offers, and it's why they are served, they are not filed with the tribunal. And this particular...
I understand that. Doesn't that actually demonstrate the ill fit between the offer of judgment procedure and arbitration?
Well, it's no more ill-fitted than it is in district court or any other court. I mean, those issues don't come out until the trial has been completed because...
But there's no mechanism for review of a final award other than pretty trivial, correction of mathematical error type.
Well, but I think that that's an overstatement of the limitation of their powers. I mean, Rule 44, A, B, and D, Rule 44 says the arbitrator may grant any remedy or relief that the arbitrator deems just and equitable within the scope of the agreement by the parties to arbitrate. Also, under 44B, in addition to the final award,
The arbitrator may make other decisions, including interim, interlocutory, or partial rulings, orders, and awards. So Rule 44B justified and authorized this panel to make additional awards, and they only terminated their jurisdiction after the very final award. And also NRS 38238 provides an arbitrator may award reasonable attorney's fees and costs and other reasonable expenses of arbitration if such an award is authorized by law in a civil action. We already know that the offers of judgments are authorized by law in a civil action. I mean, what possibly could be the public policy served to deny litigants and arbitration the right to enforce offers of judgment?
But it's not just in a civil action. It's involving the same claim. I mean, that's
involving the same claim. So, for example, if this claim...
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
I just wanted to correct the omission because I think that's problematic.
But if this claim had been filed in district court, no one would dispute that those offers of judgment would be enforceable.
That's right.
The fact that this panel refused to apply Nevada law was clearly arbitrary, capricious, and a manifest disregard of the law. There was absolutely zero facts to support that kind of ruling and deny WPH the opportunity. But going back to public policy, we already know the public policy behind statutory offers is to save time, save money. It goes really to the heart. It's a carrot and a stick to try and get your opponent to accept a number that is reasonable in payment. I mean, it really goes to the core of every strategy decision a lawyer must make in its case.
I'm going to have to ask you to make concluding comments, please.
I'm sorry.
We're out of time.
Thank you very much.
Just to say, if I can just make one comment, I'm not going to ask a question. I think we've realized that. You know, Nevada's adopted an alternative trial rule by Supreme Court rule, which says it's an alternative to arbitration that you can go to an alternate trial judge and you get full appellate rights. The standard on this case, if this had gone to an alternate trial, would have been abuse of discretion. Big difference, you know, like that. I've been here 13 years, and I've never seen this case come up, so I agree. It's something that we should take a look at, this particular issue.
And there are thousands of arbitration agreements out there in contracts as we speak, so this issue is not going away. Maybe in a decade or so, particularly if parties realize they don't get the benefit of statutory offers in arbitration, then that's a dead animal. Who's going to do it? Instead, everything gets to go to the district court. Mm-hmm. And then you guys have more work and job security going forward.
I want to thank you both for the excellent briefs and arguments. I really appreciate the input from both sides.
Thank you very much.
This matter will stand submitted.